It's been a while, but the Amateur Hour podcast is back. I'm Brian Gibberman here with Sam Fassini from CBSSports.com. Sam, you went to the scouting combine in Chicago for the very first time. What was that experience like?
It was pretty cool, actually. I think I enjoyed it more than I expected because, you know, whenever you go to an event like that that's not a game, it's just you're standing around watching people practice. You would think that that's not going to be particularly exciting, but, you know, we got a chance to talk to a lot of the top 30 guys in the NBA draft class. That was pretty cool. We got a chance to see some 5-on-5 action, too, this year, which was pretty cool, too. That was a little bit of a departure from the last 6 years. So I was overall pretty happy with the way things went down.
Did you talk to any executives or scouts that gave you any interesting tidbits of information?
I talked to a few scouts here and there, but no NBA general managers or anything, I'll say that.
Are they in like a separate section from the media, or can this like set the scene for people who don't know what it's like?
You sit in a bleacher basically at the Attack Athletics facility in Chicago, and you just go. There are scouts, there are NBA executives, there's Tom Izzo in the bleachers. Like, everyone's just right there watching games.
So it's a little bit like Summer League.
Yeah, kind of, actually. It's actually very similar to Summer League, I would say.
From the TV perspective, what the 5-on-5 games did was it made for a better TV broadcast, because in the past, for some reason, they don't like showing the athletic testing. Like, when you watch the NFL Combine, like, they'll show all the athletic testing, they'll show what the guys do. Like, the NBA Draft Combine doesn't like, they don't do that for some reason.
Like, did you see Connaughton's jump? Like, did they show that?
Oh, not on the first. They didn't show it on, he did that on day two, right?
No, he did it day one.
They didn't. I did a live, unless it was in the last hour, I had to leave. I didn't do a live blog. I did like a, of the first 3 hours, I wrote a story just chronicling the draft combine, riveting content, I know. but I had to leave for work and I get ready to go to work and I missed the last hour. So unless they did that in the last hour, they didn't even show that.
That's really interesting because you would think that like, that would drive a lot of TV getting to see Pat Connaughton do a 44-inch jump. But there's also some speculation that it wasn't actually 44 inches. But regardless, I don't think you would tell that on TV.
No, they showed a lot of the 5-on-5 games, which it didn't really do much for me. It's hard because, number one, the announcers are being more conversational, and it was hard to realize who – it was kind of hard to pick up on who was who.
Mm-hmm.
Because they didn't show starting lineups. They weren't resetting subs a lot. They did it like more
the
of a team.
The numbers are a mess.
Yeah. So
it was hard for me to even tell from the stands who I was watching sometimes.
Yeah, so that part, I mean, it was okay watching the games, but I wish they would just treat it like the NFL Network does the NFL Combine and would just show the guys doing the athletic testing, the shooting, and then kind of as you go through that, we'll talk about the guys, but they don't want to handle the broadcast like that, so whatever.
Yeah, that'd be a good idea, I think. Or, you know, maybe even, like, get in the media room and show some of these guys being interviewed. Did they do that at all?
They did not. The media room?
I didn't see any cameras big enough to really do that.
They have Andy Katz asking a couple questions to random people throughout. Like, he brings on coaches and coaches. Uh-huh. He asks questions and coaches just give non-answers to whatever he asks.
Yeah. Well, the way it's set up is in the media room, like, you know, just where you sit down and put your laptop down and do some work. They have tables in the middle of it, and all the media tables are on the outside, and all the tables on the inside of the room are player tables, basically, where they sit down. And, you know, there's like a basic media scrum, and that part was pretty fun. I would say you got to get to know some of the prospects a little bit better. By far the best one was R.J. Hunter. R.J. Hunter is terrific in every way.
Not surprising based on how his dad deals with the media.
Yeah, R.J. Hunter was talking about, like, he was talking about everything, man. I heard that at one point someone asked him about, like, the best interracial, the all-interracial basketball team. And he was just, like, going on about it. Like, going with whose answers would be. I mean, I didn't hear this. I confirmed it with a couple other people that it happened, but I was just like, you know, this guy's awesome. I love him.
So from a so now onto the basketball perspective, what do you, how do you like to use the NBA draft combine in addition to all the tape work you've done leading up to the NBA draft and how you analyze these prospects?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the way that I do it is I obviously care a lot more about the tape. I mean, that's what matters most, how these guys play in the regular season over a sample size of 33 to 40 games or however many they play, somewhere in that area. And you can get a pretty good judge of those guys based on those games. What the combine does, though, is if you see a number that really stands out, like Pat Connaughton doing a 44-inch vertical jump. Like, I thought that he would do something like, I think I said 38.5, 39 to someone that asked me earlier in the day what I thought he would do. Because apparently Quinn Cook, like, before the just before he jumped or whatever, said that this dude is the best athlete in draft. Like, he pulled a cameraman aside and said, start filming. Said, this guy's the best guy in the draft. I think Martin Rickman from Up Rocks tweeted that out, that he did that. And then Connaughton did that. So I was surprised that he did that. I was shocked. And that number certainly leapt out and made me rewatch some Connaughton tape on, I want to say, Friday morning, maybe Saturday morning, something like that. It made me think about whether or not he could be a legitimate 3-and-D guy in the NBA, for instance, because he tested well agility-wise, he tested well, he basically tested well in everything, and then he also played really well in the 5-on-5 games. So that was very impressive, I thought, for Connaughton to come in there and do what he did. So, what you're looking for is basically numbers that really stand out, in my opinion. Like Cameron Payne, I think he did like a 34-inch vertical leap. That's fine to me. Even DeLon Wright didn't help himself at all. I think he had like a 31-inch vertical leap, didn't do real well in the agility testing, but it's fine. You know, like, there are worse things in the world than not, you know, being an exceptional athlete whenever you have terrific basketball sense like DeLon Wright does. So I wouldn't say it hurt him. It didn't help him, but it didn't hurt him. But whenever you get standout numbers like what Pat Connaughton did, that's where you really set yourself apart.
I like the measurements.
The measurements and the team interviews are probably the two most important parts.
Yeah, for instance, like D'Angelo Russell, he's 6'3", so you kind of like, oh, can he be, does he need to, can he, will he have the ability to play with a lead guard or not, or does he need to be?
He's 6'5".
Without shoes. Okay, I was using without shoes, but he has that six.
Shoes. He's like 6'3", 7'5", right?
So 6'3", 2'5".
6'3", 2'5".
Yeah, so what that tells, and then you see is almost the 6'10 winning span, so you're like, all right, this guy can legitimately play the two, and it's not a problem. Like, now I want a Norman Powell and Michael Qualls, two guys who I didn't watch a ton of, had 6'10 and 7 foot wingspans for guards. That's something I'm going to go back now and watch and be like, all right, what? Because I like guys with who are long and at length. Kelly Oubre, 7'2".
Those are two guys that I was pretty high on throughout the year.
Yeah, so just seeing guys like that, like the wingspan and the standing reach are the two things I probably look at the most, because just it gives you some options with versatility position-wise that can kind of maybe expand and give a player more value with what their skill set is. So that's the thing I kind of look at and like to dig into the most.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. For instance, like Rondae Hollis-Jefferson measuring at 6'7" in shoes with a 7'2" wingspan, like, he's going to be able to guard 2 through 4 now. Like, whereas there was a question whether or not he was just a 3 beforehand, you know?
He was one of the guys I wrote about the measurements. He's not Kawhi Leonard long, but he's not Kawhi Leonard big. He's significantly bigger than Tony Allen, and he kind of fell like right in between the two. The closest guy, I went through for a bunch of different guys. I picked out three random guys without looking, so it was just blind, that just kind of maybe not exactly as a comparison, but just someone who could fit in a similar role, and his measurements were actually very similar to Andre Iguodala.
Yeah, that would make sense to me, actually. So, yeah, no, he's a guy that I think did very well for himself. He was one of my winners at the Combine. Not one of my three big ones, but he was definitely one of my winners at the Combine. Someone else was Rakeem Christmas. He had a very good Combine. He performed well in both games. Have you ever seen the movie Eddie?
What kind of question is that?
Okay, good. He's basically Stacey Patton. he doesn't know how to pass. He averaged like 1.5 assists a game this year, which was like far and away better than what he'd done in the past, which is terrifying.
I wish they actually would have moved the Knicks to St. Louis.
So Rakeem Christmas, but he measured really well. He measured in at almost 6'10", with a 7'5" wingspan. So he's legit going to be able to get away with playing center now. He's a 9'2" standing reach. Like that was a big. Measurement session for him, because there was a question whether or not he'd be like, you know, 6'9" with a 7'2" wingspan, 7'3" wingspan. Like the 7'5" wingspan was big.
I thought it was a good day for. It was what Bobby Portis needed. The 7'2" wingspan, 9-foot standing reach. I thought, I didn't know whether to expect it or not, but that's what
that's about what he is in Draft Expresses.
Yeah, that's what I was looking for. He can play some PF if you need to. He could play a little bit of a small ball center. I thought why don't you do this? Who were your three big winners
of the measurement session or the combine?
Just in general, yeah.
In general, I would say I really liked what Terry Rozier did. In general, he came in, he measured at 6'2" in shoes, 6'8" wingspan, which is really nice. He also came in the games and really performed well. He's always been a guy that's distributed well in transition. And he was always a guy that would get those defensive rebounds. He's a really good defensive rebounder for his size. He get those rebounds, push in transition, and find the right guy. He's never been a great passer in the half court. And what he did this week, it seemed like the extra space in the NBA, from the NBA three-point line really helped him a lot. Because he's not a guy that has terrific vision. He sometimes gets tunnel vision to go towards the rim. But that extra little bit of space seemed to help him find those spot-up shooters that you know, you're looking for as a point guard, especially a guy that struggles to finish a little bit like he does in the half court. So I actually liked a lot of what he did. He has me convinced that he might be able to play point guard in the NBA. And the other thing is, he tested really well athletically. He's a terrific kid. I talked to a team that interviewed him. They said he was a terrific kid in the interview, too. He had great energy and everything like that. So he's a guy that, you know, he moved up to number 27 on my board just from having that kind of a strong week.
And who else? Who were the other two?
Pat Connaughton and Christmas were the other two, but the other big one that I neglected to mention at the time, well, I mentioned him in passing, was Jordan Mickey. Jordan Mickey measured in a legit 6'8 in shoes with a 7'3 wingspan, 8'10 standing reach, so that's going to be fine to play power forward, I think. And plus, he, again, performed terrifically in the games. The shot blocking absolutely translated. He had 8 blocks in the first game. He had 4 in the second game. So he made me believe that he can legitimately be a weak side shot blocker, basically. And his offensive game's coming along, you know. He has a decent face-up game, or at least the potential for a decent face-up game. His jump shot isn't terrible. It has the makings of being very useful, at least. And that's all you can ask for at this point from a 20-year-old kid that's that good defensively and gives that kind of energy. So you'll see in my mock draft tomorrow that's being released at CBS before the lottery.
Why before? What's the point?
I'll do an updated one after.
Jesus, you people with your mock drafts before the order's released. Ridiculous.
But he'll actually be in my first round. So that's an interesting one. He moved up to number 32 on my board right now. I was really impressed with him. You know, you're out in Arizona. TJ McConnell had a good week. He didn't measure well, but he was a gamer. He did what he did at Arizona all year. And he showed it against tough competition. So that's, you know, that's exactly what you wanted to see from him, basically.
He's the leading the way for Spike Albrecht to be at the NBA Draft Combine next year.
Yeah, basically, that's what's happening right here. That's exactly what we're hoping for. And another guy that actually did well is another point guard, Andrew Harrison. He's been pretty maligned this year, but he performed well in both games. He looked a little bit quieter in the second game, and then you looked up and he had 7 assists and 2 turnovers. So that was pretty impressive to me. In the first game, he just totally took over in the second half, just in every regard. That, again, the extra space afforded to him by the NBA three-point line, it looked like it really helped him once he got into the mid-range, and he was able to shake off defenders a little bit more. He was able to find little cracks that he wasn't able to find in college. So he's a guy that definitely moved up my board a little bit, too.
It was a good couple days for my boy Justin Anderson from Virginia.
It was, yeah. It's funny. I actually moved him down on my board just because I was so high on him before. I had him at like 20, I think. And I moved him down to 24. I feel a little bit better about that. But he jumped 43 inches. He's 5% body fat on a 230-pound body. I don't know that I've ever seen a more jacked NBA basketball player. It's unbelievable how big he is.
And then 6'11", almost a 7-foot wingspan, and he tested athletically through the roof and almost everything, too.
Yeah, the scary thing with him is that the shot mechanics looked off again. Like he fixed his mechanics this year, and that's why he was shooting 50%. But what was happening at the combine was he was doing a little bit of a slingshotty type thing where his he's a left-handed shooter. His left elbow was going way past the 90% mark that you want. You want to have your elbow right at the 90-degree mark and go up from there. It was going way past, and it just looked like a slingshot that he was throwing up the rim. And what he needs to be a starting caliber NBA player, certainly, is that ability to shoot. Regardless, I think he's going to be able to defend, and he'll be useful in transition and off ball, but to really make that next step into the starting caliber NBA player, he needs to be able to shoot the ball. And the fact that he didn't shoot well is a little bit scary.
Yeah, he needs to be a 35% three-point shooter to have to be able to realistically play 30 to 35 minutes a night in some fashion. Two guys I thought it was bad for. We differ a little bit on one of them. I think on both of them a little. Devin Booker and Frank Kaminsky.
God's name was bad for Booker.
Because I know he measured longer than he had in the past, but 6'8", 2'5", for a shooting guard still is not long.
That's fine. That's pretty average, actually.
It's like I don't like average. I like long.
Yeah, but for all that he does, shooting the basketball, moving well off ball, and the fact that he tested incredibly well.
He did athletically, yeah.
He's certainly not someone you can call a loser from this. He had the highest off-guard agility test, lane agility test, since 2001. Like, he's going to be fine, I think.
He just he measured more in the Tim Hardaway Jr. range for... And it's just at time, when you're playing in the NBA, when you're dealing with the size and the length that you do, it can be a little bit difficult at times for guys to get shots off in situations to get clean looks.
Yeah, and I think that's fair, but I think he's also an elite shooter to where I'm not sure how much that scares me. I think that the fact that he measured so well in the quickness drills isn't really a surprise to me. He's very slippery when you watch him off ball. The way that he cuts off ball, the way that he comes off the screens, it's very quick, it's very slippery, so... You know, that's something that actually held up to me from, seeing the scores and then watching tape. So I think he's going to be fine, regardless of the average length. It's not great length, but he has good height. He has average length. I think he's going to be fine in the NBA.
Yeah, I still think he should be a top 20 pick. I'm not going anything crazy like that. Just
right now,
yeah,
so.
Just like my preference. I like more the Klay Thompson body type versus what Devin Booker is, would be, I think, the best way to put it.
Yeah, no, that's That's okay. I mean, I can understand that.
And then Frank Kaminsky was the one person who had a... who was taller than his wingspan was, but he also, because of how tall he was...
7'1".
Yeah, his standing reach...
He's
also,
7'1 in short shoes, too.
Yeah, his standing reach was good, so it's not the end of the world, but you still prefer... it's just like a missed opportunity. Like, if a guy 7'1 had good...
If he would have even had a 7'1 wingspan, like, that would have been a big win for him.
Yeah, exactly. So that's kind of the way I look at it. Like, it was like, if he had longer arms, it would have been a real plus for him, but
yeah.
He doesn't.
But no, I think it was fine. The guy that I think ended up coming out way worse was Dakari Johnson. You know, he did measure in at around 7 feet. With a 7'2 wingspan, that was fine. But he came in 14.9% body fat, which was 5% higher than when he did the Kentucky Pro Day back in the fall. And it really showed in his athletic tests. You know, he had a 25-inch or a 28-inch vertical leap, maybe 25 or something. I think it was 25 now I think about it. And that was 9 inches shorter than his one at that Kentucky Pro Day. Like, he's a guy that really needs to be in great shape to even have a shot to be in the NBA, because his body, you know, he's at 260, comes into the combine at 265 for what amounts to a job interview. You know, that's scary.
Yeah, you got to be smarter about that. Looney, Trey Lyles, and there was one other guy that stuck out to me that I thought shouldn't have been as fat. I don't remember now at this time, but they both came in with over a 10% body fat, which I didn't think was...
10% really isn't that bad.
It was, Lyles was 12.10 and Looney was 11.90.
Yeah, that's a little bit high, but it's not terrible.
And then,
You know, for Looney, for instance, who came in at 222, that really just might be a matter of him trying to put on weight.
Okay, the other guy was Harrell at 11.90.
And that was a really big surprise to me that he came in as heavy. I actually asked him about that. He said that it was a little bit higher than what he's played at, but he typically tries to get to 253 to 250 pounds throughout the season, but it just comes off from, you know, working out and working as hard as he does. So, I wasn't terribly disappointed once he gave me that explanation, basically.
Okay, enough of nerdy measurements. The NBA lottery is also tonight, and I'm nervous.
As you should be.
Yeah, I want the first pick, please.
I think that they need it.
I bought a bottle of Jack Daniels, so I can either celebrate or drink in sorrow.
So what happens if they get, like, number three? Like, you're in that purgatory range of, do I get drunk, like, in celebration? We're going to get D'Angelo Russell or Emmanuel Mudiay. Do I, you know, am I sad because we're not getting Jahlil Okafor or Karl Towns? Like, what do you do there?
I'm in the weird position where I either want one or I want a fallback. I don't want...
You don't want Okafor.
But here's, it's more... Okay, wait, we're not going to do a ton of Knicks stuff here because me and you are... In the very near future, we're going to tape a podcast with Chris Herring from the Wall Street Journal where we're going to talk about all this. So I don't want to get into all the Knicks stuff right now. But we are going to disagree about something here that we will talk about. So you think, why do you think, let me just pose the question for you. Who do you think, out of all the lottery teams, who do you think it is it imperative to get the first pick?
I mean, I don't think it's imperative that they get number one. But I think they need to stay in the top three, and I think it's the Knicks. Because they don't have their pick next year.
Okay, so that's your reasoning for it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, they need high-end talent there. They need a guy that they can 100% count on. And outside of the top three, I don't feel 100%. Actually, outside of the top four.
I'm fine in the top six.
Yeah, you like Cauley Stein and Winslow a little bit more than I do.
Yes, but the team I think so for that reason. So I'm kind of fine. I want one, but after that, I would rather. Again, I don't want to get into it, but I'd rather be three, four,
sure.
Or five. and then take one of the point guards, the other center, Cauley Stein, or the forward, Justice Winslow, and we can discuss all that. The team who I think I needs it the most, I think Minnesota does.
I'm willing to hear your pitch.
Because I think they need Karl Anthony Towns more than anyone else because of Pekovic's contract at center. And they need that type of player at power forward. They have Muhammad, who looks like he could end up being a starting small forward in the league. They already have Rubio at point guard. So you're basically looking at, and they have Wiggins already. So the two people that make the most sense for them, and they have Levine also. So, I mean, the two people, Russell, but mainly Towns is the far and away the best fit for that roster.
I think that both Towns and Russell fit about equally to that roster. I think Towns is a little bit better of a player and a little bit better of a prospect. So that's why I think that number one is important for them. But, you know, if they fall back to number three, they're still going to get D'Angelo Russell. They're still going to be fine. Because D'Angelo Russell is exactly what they need at the two. He's an elite shooter that you can put in between Ricky Rubio and Andrew Wiggins. And he can really space the floor for those guys. He can create plays for those guys. Ricky Rubio's pretty good at, you know, he needs to have the ball a lot. So, you know, that would be a little bit of a tenuous fit as far as Russell and Rubio both needing the ball. But, you know, if you can use D'Angelo Russell as a great spacer to start, I think that would really help them. It would really help Andrew Wiggins develop.
I mean, like, I guess you could just create this incredible defensive team and have Rubio, Wiggins, and Winslow also.
Yes.
Play Wiggins at the two, but I still think for that
your
team,
your spacing would be a disaster.
Yeah, but I think if you can, I think having Towns, Rubio, and Wiggins together really changes where that team can go.
I agree with that. I think that's fair, but if you're the Knicks and you don't end up with Karl Towns, or you don't end up with Jahlil Okafor, think that, you know, the triangle is going to hold back those guards a little bit.
They don't run the triangle as much as they did early in the season. If you watched as
I think that they
went
want to run the triangle.
I don't think they do. I think there was Zach Lowe brought up. No, we're not doing this. We're saving this. We're going to save this for the
Knicks.
We'll
save this for when we do our podcast with Chris Herring.
Do you know who?
For me, it's the Knicks.
Okay. Do you know who is it? The 76ers is going to be a fun night for them.
Oh, God. They're.
So they can. They have.
Yeah.
They can get. They have a 15.6% chance at the number one pick.
Yes.
Then the Lakers have the fourth pick. If they go to six or seven, that goes to the Sixers.
They can only go to six, right?
No, they can go to six or. So there's a 17.2% chance they go to six or seven.
Yeah.
I have the story from Sports Illustrated, and then
the chart up.
They can also get the Heat's pick if it falls to 11 through 14. They have the Heat's pick, top 10 protected, and that's a 9.1% chance.
Mm-hmm.
So they could end up with three picks in an absolutely loaded lottery.
And it would take all kinds of statistical luck for it to happen.
The 17.2 was higher than I thought it was for the Lakers pick.
It is a little bit higher than I thought it was, too. And actually, the Heat's is a little bit higher than I thought it was, too.
The Heat was right around where I thought it was, because I was tracking that a lot towards the end of the season, talking about how stupid Riley was for having that team go after the eighth pick instead of bombing this year and getting a higher pick and resting. I would have given Wade, let him rest up even more than he did to not put stress on his body with them having no chance at really doing anything this season. I thought it was just a waste of 2,000 minutes on Dwayne Wade's body, and they lucked out. They didn't, out of any of the teams in this draft, they do not deserve to have their first round pick because of how they handled this season. It bothers me. And I also just don't like Pat Riley. But that's besides the point.
How terrifying would it be if the Thunder got the first pick, by the way?
Who would you have them take?
Okafor. Like, undoubtedly, I would have them take Okafor. Because Ibaka covers up everything that you want from him. Like, he's a better post player than Towns. He's a better passer than Towns. He just kind of, his elite strengths are better than Towns' elite strengths.
Okafor's
weaknesses are going to be covered up by Ibaka.
Here's my question. When you have a team with Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook, do you want someone clogging the middle like that posting up?
I think you can live with it. Like, I think that you can run. So I think he's better in the screen and roll. I think he's more nimble than people give him credit for. I think you can do that. And I think that a post option could really open up that offense because you are going to have your guys collapse down on him, period. Like, as a rookie, he is that good in the post where you're going to have to either double him at times or you're going to have to at least have, like, a help guy come over eventually. Just because he is that good and he's such a good passer that he's going to help space their offense from the post.
No, and I agree with you. I probably would take Okafor in that situation, but I'm going to imagine the spacing with Ibaka and Towns.
Yeah, that would be terrifying too.
And then the other thing, and I think this is the most unrealistic if they got the first pick, but also I think would actually be the most fun, just draft Winslow and play him in... have Ibaka, Durant, and Winslow as your center, power forward, small forward, and just be the most dominating small ball unit in the NBA.
Yeah, or you could draft D'Angelo Russell and just, like, have super spacing.
Yeah, but then they would probably re-sign Cantor.
Yeah, but that would be, like, one of the best offenses ever if you did that.
Re-sign
Cantor, who's a really good offensive player, a really good pick and roll player.
He's so bad at defense.
Again, though, I think that him playing with Ibaka is going to help.
That's
really playing some with Ibaka.
That's a good point.
That's going to help.
No, you're right. And he really didn't spend a lot. I forgot Ibaka got hurt at the end of the season, and they didn't.
Like, Cantor is a flawed player in every way. But
he's good, though. He has skills.
He's a good player.
Yeah.
I think we've swung a little bit too far the other way, kind of how people swung a little bit too far the other way with Josh Smith. Like, Cantor is a good player if you put him in the right situation, if you put him in the right spot.
Yeah, and he played well off of Westbrook. They had success together. It's just the defense without Ibaka there. Adams isn't at the point, or he's just as good. He's a good defender, but you need some extreme cover up to take care of Cantor's flaws, and Ibaka has just a skill set that can maybe do that a little bit better.
Right, here's the other thing with that, too. With Kevin Durant back, you're going to be able to have Russell Westbrook expend more energy defensively, which is going to help cut down on penetration, which is going to make him look a little bit better as well.
That's a good point. I agree with that. So the all right, let's play a game. The Sixers end up with 3, 6, and 11. What do they do?
God, like.
Oh, in this draft, that's like a dream come true in this draft, man.
Depending on who they get at, or depending on, like, what happens with the number one pick in that scenario, you could conceivably trade 3 and 6 for number one.
Or
I think that there are teams that would move back for number 3.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would probably do it for 11. I probably wouldn't even need 6. But I would try and get 6. But okay, no. Let me say, if I was 2. If I'm 1, I'm not trading it. I'm pretty much just taking Towns. Say if the Sixers had like 4, 6, and 11, if they really wanted D'Angelo Russell, and I was 2, I would drop back and I would probably take 4 and 11, and I would ask for 6, but in the end, if it came down to it, and they refused, and there was 10 seconds on the clock, I would say yes to taking 11.
That's fair. I think that I would need...
And Robert Covington?
I would do it for 11.
What about 11 and Robert Covington?
I mean, Covington's a bit part. You don't do that. You get your guy, basically, in that scenario.
But what happens if you think they're equal and you're okay with dropping back to 4?
Then yeah, you do it. But typically that scenario doesn't happen. Typically you're not going to have guys equal on your board.
See,
you're going to have one guy that you think is better and is a better fit for your organization.
See, to me in this draft after Towns, I think those next 5 guys are kind of equal, man.
Yeah, no, I'm more in the Towns and Okafor are equal, and then Russell and Moutier are, you know, they're going to be fifth base, just like Okafor and Towns are.
Why don't you like Winslow?
I don't think he's going to be able to play small ball four in the NBA.
But even him at his length says he can. He's 6'4", but he had the 6'11 wingspan.
He's like an 8'8 standing reach.
What's Draymond Green's? And that's unfair to compare the two of them.
Yeah, I mean, it's comparable to Green's. It's comparable to Harrison Barnes's. It's just going to be a very rare thing for him to play small ball four in the NBA, I think.
Oh, I don't think that's his natural role. I think he's more of a...
But the thing is, that's what he was most successful at this year. Like, when he was playing the three, he was good, not great. When he was playing the four, he was great.
But you could also, a lot of teams can generate the same spacing of him playing at the four with him playing the three in the NBA. This is a different...
That's true. I think he's going to be a really good player. I think he's a little bit below where Russell and Moutier are. And I think Moutier is a little bit better than D'Angelo Russell, to be honest.
How much of him have you been able to watch?
Pretty decent amount, probably 8-ish games.
See, that's what I hate. I haven't been able to watch full games of him. I've read up on him as much as I could, and I've watched a ton of YouTube on him, but I hate not seeing. Like, I forget, I might have talked about this on a previous podcast, or it was through to someone else through a text or something. Like, with the NFL draft, like, you can pick out a player, and the way football is, you can watch cut-ups of an entire game in 11 minutes, and it doesn't matter the stopping and starting. It doesn't matter. In the NBA, to really analyze these guys, you have to watch full games. So I hate that I haven't been able to do that, but I like what I've seen through, and it's more than highlights, reading breakdowns that other people have done. You're basically just relying on other people to do some of your work for you because you don't have the ability to.
Yeah, I can make a joke here, but I'm not going to do that.
Do it. No, why not?
Because I am a pseudo-professional now.
Oh, okay. well, you're going to need to tell me the joke after.
And yes. Anyway, the reason I like Emmanuel Moutier is I think it's a little bit unfair to call him an elite athlete. Like, some people compare him to John Wall athletically.
No.
Put him in that range. That's unfair.
More Lillard? Is that fair?
They're different athletes. I'm comparing, the way I'm thinking about it is he's Tyreek Evans. He's that physical kind of, he plays the pick and roll that well, but he's pass first. Like, imagine what a pass first Tyreek Evans could do in the NBA.
And I'd say he's a little bit more explosive than Tyreek Evans, tiny bit, from what
maybe
I've seen.
A little bit.
Not much, but I like that better. I'm with you. I don't see any Russell Westbrook or John Wall
in
him
that kind of
at all. Yeah, and I also, Fraschilla kept comparing him to Jason Kidd. I don't see that at all either.
I didn't see Kidd when he was coming out of Cal, so I can't.
Okay.
Really say,
NBA kid, Kid was a different, little bit of a different body type than him, and I think he was even more pass first than Moutier was.
Yeah, Jason Kidd in the NBA was more pass first than what I've seen from Moutier.
So who are you, we'll finish up with this, who do you want to see get the first pick for whatever reason?
Well, I guess in my scenario, I just kind of root for narrative at this point.
Yeah, just like, interesting to
me. I mean, the most interesting thing to me would be Oklahoma City getting this pick. It's not going to happen.
Right,
but like,
realistically, give me a realistic one.
You know, Charlotte would be interesting to me because Charlotte would have a tough decision at that point. They have Al Jefferson for another year, I believe.
I think he can opt out. I will look this up. Continue talking, and I will look that up and tell you.
Here, I actually have it up right now. He can opt out of $13.5 million. I mean, I don't know if he's going to do that. That's kind of a weird scenario for him because he could get TV money next year, but he's also getting up in age a little bit to where he might want to get one final contract now, knowing that he's not going to be a max guy. That's possible, I would say, that he does opt out. But that's a team that really needs talent.
They need shooting.
They need shooting, and they just flat out need talent, because Kemba is good, not great. Michael Kidd-Gilchrist is a good role player, not great, I would say, even though I really like him.
Well, I don't know.
He's potentially a defensive player of the year candidate.
Yeah, I really, really like Kidd-Gilchrist, and his shot improved a little bit this year. I think he's trending in the right direction. He's
probably not going to be like a guy that carries you either, though. They don't have the guy that carries you yet, and they really need him, because Cody Zeller's not that guy. I was never big on Noah Vonleh, so
He deserves a chance, though.
He deserves a chance, but I don't think he's that guy personally. So I think that this lottery, they're a team that I have way higher, actually, than their draft is, than what their selection is. I have them in my top five of teams that really need the number one overall pick.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think Russell or Towns would make a whole lot of sense for that team.
Yeah, and I think Okafor would too, to be honest, because he would at least be an elite offensive option for a team that really needs an elite offensive option.
Well, they'd have to boot Al Jefferson in that scenario. You can't play those two together.
That would be fine. He's not going to be there long term anyway.
Yeah, exactly. I'm trying to think if there's anyone. The Sixers could use it just to make sure they get who they want.
Yeah, I mean, the Sixers are going to be fine at three. I think D'Angelo Russell, honestly, might be the best fit for that roster anyway.
And then the Lakers, very obviously, are kind of a similar situation to Charlotte.
Yes, like they're just so bereft of talent at this point that they really, really need the first overall pick.
Yeah, and they could pretty – I mean, there's not a position – I mean, yeah. Randall –
they're taking best player available.
Yeah, because none of the best players available are a power forward, so it doesn't really matter in that context.
Yeah.
And, I mean, maybe Towns could be a power forward in some situations. Yeah, but I could see some teams playing him at power forward with his...
Like Philly, if they decided to take him, would probably have to play him at power forward some.
And then would have to trade someone.
I don't know if you're there. I mean, they might just trade Noel because he's closer to being paid.
Yeah, it just doesn't... There's no reason to have him be Noel and Towns on your roster. I mean, at some point, they have to start constructing a roster and... terms of trying to win basketball games, and if you're doing that, and I mean, it doesn't make sense to split. I mean, you're basically limiting yourself to 33 minutes apiece for each of those guys for two positions, and that's without playing another player.
Yeah, here's kind of an interesting scenario. If you're Denver and you end up at seven, do you trade that pick for Noel, where you could have Noel play, but they have Fareed too is the problem. So I guess Denver doesn't really work. But if you're Sacramento there. Would you be willing to trade six for Noel, knowing that he's a pretty good fit with DeMarcus Cousins?
That's an interesting one. Yeah, but I think you could just... I would probably just sit there and take Willie Cauley-Stein instead of giving up anything.
Yeah, I mean, what you'd be doing is you'd be trading for the certainty of Nerlens Noel, knowing that he is an impact defensive player versus the relative uncertainty of Willie Cauley-Stein. I think Cauley-Stein's going to be a really good player, don't get me wrong. But there is still some relative uncertainty there. And also, you would be closer to paying Nerlens Noel, too.
If I'm Denver, I am probably trying to... It sounds like Lawson's done there. I'd probably try and use him in a package to move up. And then they also have... They have a Grizzlies pick. They have a Thunder pick. See, if they're in, like, the 6-7 range, use 6, Lawson, future first-round pick. It doesn't... I'm pretty sure they were... They could have came this year, but I'm pretty sure... They fell into the protection, so they both got pushed back. Mm-hmm. That would be some sort of package to move to try and get up and get. Is there another team that could use an elite talent? I know Gallo played better at the end of the season, but there's so much uncertainty surrounding him and Lawson. It sounds like his time is done there, and Fareed is a limited player.
I've never really been a big Kenneth Fareed guy, but apparently they are. So that's. I mean, they're paying him like he's going to be a top three guy for them for the foreseeable future. So, and you can't play him and Noel together. That's just going to end up being a disaster.
No, it's just like him and J.J. Hickson were. I mean, Noel's it won't be as bad defensively, but on offense it would be similar.
You couldn't do that. That would not be. But if you're, if you're Phoenix, could you do that? Because they're going to try and get up and down. He's going to be fine in the pick and roll offensively. Eventually, you'd have him next to Markieff Morris.
And who for Phoenix?
Noel. Like, could you do Noel for 13?
They had the chance to draft him.
Yeah, but that was when the knee situation was a little bit of a problem.
And Len's a good 10. Noel ended up. I would have taken Noel over Len at that time, but Len has very much grown on me. There's some in the thing. What's good is I don't think it's crazy to think that Len ends up being, even though I think he develops into a very good center, that you kind of want to cap his minutes around 25 to 27 and try and lengthen out his career and keep him healthy. I don't know if he ever ends up being a 30 minute a night player. So right. I think it makes sense for them to draft. It definitely makes sense for them to. I kind of like Trey Lyles or Bobby. I really would like Bobby Portis with them.
That would be a very good pick for them. I have them with Kaminsky right now because I have Portis going right ahead of them to Indiana at 12. So I think that Lyles would work there. I think Portis would work there. I think Kaminsky would work there. I would go Kaminsky over Lyles because I think you can play Kaminsky at the 5 a little bit easier.
And that's what you want to do with him. You want to find someone who can simulate the Channing Frye role, and so they can get back into what they did when they were more successful in 13-14 versus this past season.
Right. They're another team that, again, I have a little bit higher than their pick would be. I have them in the top 10 of teams that could really use this number one overall pick because Karl Towns would be perfect for them.
Yeah, that's not allowed.
Just don't get your hopes up.
Oh, that's been broken already. You have anything? We'll let you go. You got anything you want to plug? You have to talk to me tomorrow also. So.
I do have to talk to you tomorrow. I got to meet Chris Herring really briefly in Chicago. That was good. Chris is terrific. I'm going to have a thing on who needs the number one overall pick the most. I'm going to have a mock draft tomorrow. So it'll be a pretty busy day for me. I'll have a lot of hashtag content up on CBSSports.com.
All right, so as Sam says tomorrow, that will actually be today. So go to CBSSports.com,
yes,
and you'll be able to see all that stuff today as you're listening to the podcast. Make sure to check that out. And that wraps up a return edition of the Amateur Hour podcast.